Chapter 4. The runic writing exercises the professor, undoubtedly it is runic, said the professor, bending his brows. But there is a secret in it, and I mean to discover the key. A violent gesture finished the sentence. Sit there, he added, holding out his fist towards the table. Sit there, and write. I was seated in a trice. Now I will dictate to you every letter of our alphabet which corresponds with each of these Icelandic characters. We will see what that will give us. But, by Saint Michael, if you should dare to deceive me, the dictation commenced. I did my best. Every letter was given me one after the other, with the following remarkable result. Millimeters R R N L L S S R V L C S I D S G T S S M F D F N I D R K T SAM A T R A T S A D R N M N I N V E C T R I L S A T S R N N V C R C E A P C C R M I E V L F R A N F D T I A C A C I B O C A D I A REDACTOR. In the original version the initial letter is an M with a superscore over it. It is my supposition that this is the translator's way of writing millimeters, and I have replaced it accordingly, since our typography does not allow such a character. When this work was ended, my uncle tore the paper from me and examined it attentively for a long time. What does it all mean? He kept repeating mechanically. Upon my honor, I could not have enlightened him. Besides, he did not ask me, and he went on talking to himself. This is what is called a cryptogram, or cipher, he said, in which letters are purposely thrown in confusion, which if properly arranged would reveal their sense. Only think that under this jargon there may lie concealed the clue to some great discovery. As for me, I was of opinion that there was nothing at all in it, though, of course, I took care not to say so. Then the professor took the book and the parchment, and diligently compared them together. These two writings are not by the same hand, he said. The cipher is of later date than the book, an undoubted proof of which I see in a moment. The first letter is a double M, a letter which is not to be found in Turlison's book, and which was only added to the alphabet in the 14th century. Therefore there are 200 years between the manuscript and the document. I admitted that this was a strictly logical conclusion. I am therefore led to imagine, continued my uncle, that some possessor of this book wrote these mysterious letters. But who was that possessor? Is his name nowhere to be found in the manuscript? My uncle raised his spectacles, took up a strong lens, and carefully examined the blank pages of the book. On the front of the second, the title page, he noticed a sort of stain which looked like an inkblot. But in looking at it very closely he thought he could distinguish some half-effaced letters. My uncle at once fastened upon this as the center of interest, and he labored at that blot, until by the help of his microscope he ended by making out the following runic characters which he read without difficulty. Armsak Nussum, he cried in triumph. Why, that is the name of another Icelander, a savant of the 16th century, a celebrated alchemist. I gazed at my uncle with satisfactory admiration. Those alchemists, he resumed, Avicenna, Bacon, Lully, Paracelsus, were the real and only savants of their time. They made discoveries at which we are astonished. Has not this Sacnussum concealed under his cryptogram some surprising invention? It is so. It must be so. The professor's imagination took fire at this hypothesis. No doubt, I ventured to reply, but what interest would he have in thus hiding so marvelous a discovery? Why? How can I tell? Did not Galileo do the same by Saturn? We shall see. I will get at the secret of this document, and I will neither sleep nor eat until I have found it out. My comment on this was a half-suppressed H. Nor you either, Axel, he added. The deuce, said I to myself. Then it is lucky I have eaten two dinners today. First of all, we must find out the key to this cipher. That cannot be difficult. At these words I quickly raised my head. But my uncle went on soliloquizing. There's nothing easier. In this document there are 132 letters, viz. 77 consonants and 55 vowels. This is the proportion found in southern languages, whilst northern tongues are much richer in consonants. Therefore, this is in the southern language. These were very fair conclusions, I thought. But what language is it? Here I looked for a display of learning, but I met instead with profound analysis. This Saknussemm, he went on, was a very well-informed man. Now since he was not writing in his own mother tongue, he would naturally select that which was currently adopted by the choice spirits of the 16th century, I mean Latin. If I am mistaken, I can but try Spanish, French, Italian, Greek, or Hebrew. But the savants of the 16th century generally wrote in Latin. I am therefore entitled to pronounce this, priori, to be Latin. It is Latin. I jumped up in my chair. My Latin memories rose in revolt against the notion that these barbarous words could belong to the sweet language of Virgil. Yes, it is Latin, my uncle went on. But it is Latin confused and in disorder, perturbata sua ordinata, as Euclid has it. Very well, thought I, if you can bring order out of that confusion, my dear uncle, you are a clever man. Let us examine carefully, said he again, taking up the leaf upon which I had written. H here is a series of 132 letters in apparent disorder. There are words consisting of consonants only, as NRRLLS, others, on the other hand, in which vowels predominate, as for instance the fifth, aneif, or the last but one, acebo. Now this arrangement has evidently not been premeditated. It has arisen mathematically in obedience to the unknown law which has ruled in the succession of these letters. It appears to me a certainty that the original sentence was written in the proper manner, and afterwards distorted by a law which we have yet to discover. Whoever possesses the key of this cipher will read it with fluency. What is that key? Axel, have you got it? I answered not a word, and for a very good reason. My eyes had fallen upon a charming picture, suspended against the wall, the portrait of G.R. Eubin. My uncle's ward was at that time at Altona, staying with a relation, and in her absence I was very downhearted. For I may confess it to you now, the pretty Verlandes and the professor's nephew loved each other with a patience and a calmness entirely German. We had become engaged unknown to my uncle, who was too much taken up with geology, to be able to enter into such feelings as ours. G.R. Eubin was a lovely blue-eyed blonde, rather given to gravity and seriousness, but that did not prevent her from loving me very sincerely. As for me, I adored her, if there is such a word in the German language. Thus it happened that the picture of my pretty Verlandes threw me in a moment out of the world of realities into that of memory and fancy. There looked down upon me the faithful companion of my labors and my recreations. Every day she helped me to arrange my uncle's precious specimens. She and I labeled them together. Mademoiselle G.R. Eubin was an accomplished mineralogist. She could have taught a few things to a savant. She was fond of investigating abstruse scientific questions. What pleasant hours we have spent in study, and how often I envied the very stones which she handled with her charming fingers. Then, when our leisure hours came, we used to go out together, and turn into the shady avenues by the Elster, and went happily side by side up to the old windmill, which forms such an improvement to the landscape at the head of the lake. On the road we chatted hand in hand. I told her amusing tales at which she laughed heartily. Then we reached the banks of the Elbe, and after having bid goodbye to the swan, sailing gracefully amidst the white water lilies, we returned to the quay by the steamer. That is just where I was in my dream, when my uncle with a vehement thump on the table, dragged me back to the realities of life. Come, said he, the very first idea which would come into anyone's head, to confuse the letters of a sentence, would be to write the words vertically instead of horizontally. Indeed, said I, now we must see what would be the effect of that. Axel, put down upon this paper any sentence you like, only instead of arranging the letters in the usual way, one after the other, place them in succession in vertical columns, so as to group them together in five or six vertical lines. I caught his meaning, and immediately produced the following literary wonder. IYLOAULOLWRBOUNGEVWMDRNEEYEA. Good, said the professor, without reading them. Now set down those words, in a horizontal line. I obeyed, and with this result. ILOULOURBOUNGEVWMDRNEE. Excellent, said my uncle, taking the paper hastily out of my hands. This begins to look just like an ancient document. The vowels and the consonants are grouped together in equal disorder. There are even capitals in the middle of words, and commas too, just as in Saknussemm's parchment. I considered these remarks very clever. Now, said my uncle, looking straight at me, to read the sentence which you have just written, and with which I am wholly unacquainted, I shall only have to take the first letter of each word, then the second, the third, and so forth. And my uncle, to his great astonishment, and my much greater, read. Love you well, my own dear G.R. Eubin. Hallo! Cried the professor. Yes, indeed, without knowing what I was about, like an awkward and unlucky lover, I had calm promised myself, by writing this unfortunate sentence. Aha, you are in love with G.R. Eubin? He said, with the right look for a guardian. Yes, no. I stammered. You love G.R. Eubin, he went on once or twice dreamily. Well, let us apply the process I have suggested to the document in question. My uncle, falling back into his absorbing contemplations, had already forgotten my imprudent words. I merely say imprudent, for the great mind of so learned a man of course had no place for love affairs, and happily the grand business of the document gained me the victory. Just as the moment of the supreme experiment arrived, the professor's eyes flashed right through his spectacles. There was a quivering in his fingers as he grasped the old parchment. He was deeply moved. At last he gave a preliminary cough, and with profound gravity, naming in succession the first, then the second letter of each word, he dictated me the following. Mesmkasendra. Iistok. Segnitum vrnisert saret, radisatva kama adniksetsad nlakartni ovasiratraxer bhtabilet mcmaredar ksilvko islifensni. I confess I felt considerably excited in coming to the end. These letters named, one at a time, had carried no sense to my mind. I therefore waited for the professor with great pomp to unfold the magnificent, but hidden Latin of this mysterious phrase. But who could have foretold the result? A violent thump made the furniture rattle, and spilt some ink, and my pen dropped from between my fingers. That's not it, cried my uncle, there's no sense in it. Then darting out like a shot, bowling downstairs like an avalanche, he rushed into the Knixtus and fled. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.